Hey.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good, good.
Good.
Like
Did
your
you have a good
setup.
weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's much better. Camera makes all the difference in the world. You told me that a long time ago.
Good
You were
deal.
right. Yeah, you were right. It's all good. Switch backgrounds. Garth's using the other one. We're just
Oh,
sort of
okay.
experimenting,
Good
going back
deal.
and forth. So, did you have a good weekend?
Very nice. Yeah, sure did. Sure did. I'm gonna go
Awesome.
ahead and let people in here. That's all right. Can you see
Oh,
my
for sure.
can you see the slides on my
Yeah.
screen? Okay.
Yeah, it's all good.
All right. Got the recording going. Let me check. I'm just gonna make sure I have the right mic. Yep. All right. You sound good. So,
Great.
all right. Let people in.
Thanks.
All right. Welcome, welcome. Hello, hello. All right, Shanita's here, Jake is here, Susan's here, Sonia's here. Hello, hello. Great to see people getting signed in. Welcome, welcome. All right. Feel free to leave your camera off if you would like. Feel free to come on camera if you ever would like to say something. We'll leave that up to you. We don't have this set up as a webinar because we expect this to be a small group and an intimate kind of book study. But very glad that you are here. I'm joined today by my co-author, Heather Bell Williams, and we'll be alternating chapters today. Heather, how are you?
Great, thanks, Justin. Teachers come back to work tomorrow, so my book bag's all packed and my lunch is made, and it's one of those before school nights that I feel super ready because it's day one.
Good deal.
Hopefully that continues.
Good deal. Well, thanks so much for being here. I know it's super late where you are. You're 2 hours ahead of me and it's 8 o'clock here. So
It's all
appreciate you
good.
being here. And yeah, feel free to not stick around super long afterward. I know you've got a big day coming. But hey, Shanita, great to see you here. Everyone, if you wouldn't mind just saying hi in the chat, let me know that you can see and hear right now. Heather and I are on camera. I don't know if anybody else is on camera. I'll leave that up to you. Let's see. Hey, Shanita, how are you? Great to see you here. You should see our slides on screen, and we're both on camera. But yeah, we're gonna get
I
started
see
in just a minute here.
everything.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
How are
Thanks for being
you?
here. Doing well. Doing well. Very excited to jump right in.
Good. How are you, Heather? I'm great. How are you doing, Shanita?
I'm making
Awesome. Good to
it.
hear. Great to hear.
One day at a time.
Absolutely.
One day at a time.
Indeed. All right. Well, thank you again for being here. Welcome, Tracy. Hey, Sonia. Hope you're doing well. Hope everyone is doing well with the weather. I know there's kind of a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico right now. I know it's probably impacting people. So we hope everyone is safe and definitely want to keep people in our thoughts as that makes landfall. We are going to move pretty quickly. Heather and I were chatting just a little bit. We have a lot of ground to cover, and this will be we're going to try to keep it to an hour. We'll see how we do, and I know you will have to go at some point. Based on your own, just schedule and what you've got going on. And certainly no hard feelings if you do have to, if you can't stick around the entire time. We will, I'd say when in doubt, we will move quickly. What I would like to have as much as possible is I would love to have your comments in the chat. We probably won't do a lot of stopping for discussion, just for the sake of time and also for the sake of people who are watching the recording, which I think will be the vast majority of people who just were not able to be here live. But we've got the first five chapters of the book to talk about today. And the reason we're doing this now at the beginning of the year is to help you get into classrooms, to help you take action quickly. So everything that we talk about today is not intended to be theory, to be something that you tuck away and keep in the back of your mind forever. This is intended to be something that you use tomorrow. So if you have students back tomorrow, you can implement everything that we're talking about today tomorrow. If your students won't be back for a little bit, as Heather's will not quite yet, you can use this as soon as school is in session. So again, thank you so much for being here. We will go ahead and kick things off since it is the top of the hour. And everyone, please feel free to make ample use of the chat. I'm gonna trade off with Heather here. I'll do chapter one, she'll do chapter two. Do I have that right, Heather? You're doing chapter two? Is that correct?
You do, perfect.
All right, good deal. And we'll let some more people in here. All right. Well, let's go ahead and kick things off. Welcome everyone to week one of our Now We're Talking book study. I'm Justin Bader from the Principal Center, and I'm joined today by my co-author, Heather Bell Williams, who is going to help me lead this book study over the next 4 weeks. So in four Sunday nights, we're gonna get through the entire book. And if you have the audiobook, that is totally great. If you have the hard, everybody should have the hard copy either on hand or on its way. If you are a new member, it should be on its way. If you've been a member for a while and you don't have it, please let us know because you should have it. You should have access to the audiobook in your member dashboard. And if you ever need help with any of that, please reach out to our customer service team. We'll get you fixed up. It is not our expectation that you will have read the book in advance of each session. I know it's kind of a crazy time of year, and we didn't want that to be any kind of obstacle. You know, listen to the audiobook when you can, it will be helpful, but we're going to give you as direct access to the ideas as possible. Last week, we talked a little bit about an overview and gave some of the big picture. So today we're going to jump right in to the first five chapters. And then next week, we'll move on to chapters 6 through 10, which is all about productivity. So if you are feeling overwhelmed with email and just all the stuff you have to do and feeling like that's really interfering with your ability to get into classrooms, stay tuned, listen to chapters 6 through 10, and they will make a big difference. And just by way of housekeeping, all of the recordings for this book study are going to be under the Instructional Leadership Show in your member dashboard. So with that, I think we are poised to dive right in and talk about chapter one. And chapter one is all about our why and how this works. What, you know, what our theory of action is for getting into classrooms in the first place. And I would love to have your thoughts in the chat. Maybe you can kind of on paper make yourself a little pie chart and say, what are my reasons for getting into classrooms? Maybe you have a number one reason. Maybe you have some secondary and tertiary reasons. But percentage-wise, let's just use percents because you can't really draw a pie chart in the comments, but maybe draw yourself one on paper and then respond in the chat if you would. What are some of your reasons for wanting to get into classrooms? Is it about monitoring? Is it about feedback? Is it about visibility? What are all the different reasons you have for getting into classrooms? And Heather, I'll go ahead and ask you, since you're here and have done this probably more than almost anyone else on earth, what have been some of your reasons for getting into classrooms?
Sure, Justin. One of the reasons I started was because I needed that bird's eye view of what was going on in the school. I felt from a school improvement perspective that I was the only person who had that ability, right? Everyone else is doing their thing. They're in their classrooms. And so I really felt I needed to have that bird's eye view to pull things together around school improvement planning.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's big picture decisions, right?
Uh-huh.
Right. Kia says monitoring and impacting instructional practices. Shanita says seeing what's going on, being able to help teachers when and where needed. Yeah. There's no more powerful tool for leaders than to see firsthand what's going on, right? Tracy says, helping teachers get better on the items we need to move us forward. Yeah, so that individual connection with the school improvement goals, with the individual practice and the big picture. Sean says, finger on the pulse of the culture and climate, notice areas of strength and growth. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I have to give some credit for where this idea comes from, and it's an unusual source. I have to really credit Toyota with initially giving me an understanding of why it's so important for leaders to be in classrooms. At Toyota, they have this idea called Go and See, this idea that leaders cannot simply rely on reports and data and stay in the office and understand what their people are doing. The leaders have to get out of the office and get into what at Toyota is called the shop floor, the factory floor, and of course for us is classrooms. So this go and see philosophy has a lot to do, not just with big picture leadership, but with day-to-day management and being able to support people. And I'm not a big fan of the dichotomy between leadership and management that says we don't want to be managers. That's a waste of time. We want to be leaders because that's how we change things. Well, I think in order to improve things, we have to be able to manage them, right? We have to understand what it is that we're dealing with. We have to know, as people said in the comments, the strengths and weaknesses, the strengths and opportunities of our staff. And to do that, we have got to get into classrooms. And when we get there, I believe that what we need to do is not just tell people what to do, not just whip people into shape and say, you know, work harder or do this, do that, do the other thing. I believe that the most powerful thing for us to do when we get into classrooms is to engage teachers in conversation. And doing so builds trust. Doing so builds our understanding of what's going on. It helps us influence people's practice, and it helps us understand what people might need other than just feedback in order to improve. And one of the most formative books for me in understanding why it's so powerful to get into classrooms from an education perspective is Charlotte Danielson's book, Talk About Teaching, which is all about professional conversation. So if you're ever interested in learning more about how conversation can really improve your school, not just individual teachers, but improve your school big picture, I highly recommend that book because that's a good one. If you're just joining us, welcome. Great to see so many members here. Let's talk about some of the big benefits that we highlight in chapter one. First of all is decisional information. So we talk about school improvement and being able to make those big decisions. As Heather said, as a leader, you have a unique perspective and a unique responsibility for making those big picture decisions, and making them with information, with firsthand information on hand is it's just going to make everything better. Of course, it's going to build those professional relationships, and it's going to allow you to plan professional development. So as I said, what we're going to do, just in the interest of time, we're not going to spend a ton of time stopping for discussion, but what I would like to invite you to think about and respond to in the chat for this session, for this section, is around maybe some of this dichotomy between leadership and management. What stands out in your mind as we talk about leadership and management and getting into classrooms as the real place or the factory floor? We don't really like that factory metaphor very much, but we know the real place where the work is being done in schools is, of course, the classroom. So let me know what thoughts you have on that in the chat. Heather's going to keep an eye on the chat, and we will enjoy the discussion as it moves along. So if you wouldn't mind commenting a bit on any of those issues that stand out to you. And I'm going to go ahead and give you my definition of instructional leadership, which we talked about last week. I believe instructional leadership is the practice of making and implementing operational and improvement decisions in the service of student learning. And we do lump operational and improvement decisions together because in order to improve something, we have to understand what it is that we're trying to make improvements to. And for the same reason, I have kind of a positive view of what's often thought of as a negative thing, and that's the status quo. I don't dislike the idea of the status quo. Now, there might be things about the status quo that we need to change, but I think we also have to give the status quo credit for whatever good results we're getting, and then be selective and be careful about what it is precisely that we're seeking to change. Because sometimes we get a little ahead of ourselves and we think, oh, well, the status quo is terrible. We need to change everything. And then we realize, no, actually the status quo is a mixed bag, right? It's what's producing our current results, some of which we're happy with and some of which we're not. So I think to get into classrooms, to see what that status quo is one of the most powerful things we can do as leaders. And my kids are in a Leader in Me school. Our local school is a Leader in Me school this year. They've just adopted that Covey program. I think it's a great program. So they're learning the 7 habits of highly effective people. And one of them, I don't think I call this out in the book, but you might recognize this in the theory of action, this idea of Covey's 5th habit: seek first to understand, then to be understood. One of the things that surprises people about this book, about Now We're Talking, the book that we're here to discuss, is that it's not just about how to give people lots of your opinions, right? It's not just about heavy feedback that comes from you and tells people what to do. It's largely about conversation that helps you understand where people are coming from, what their intentions are, what their decision-making is like. And it's only when we seek to understand that information that we can only get from being in classrooms that we can be more effective and make those good decisions. Great discussion taking place here in the comments. I'm going to put up some more questions for discussion as we move through very quickly. Let's see. Kia says leadership helps others grow to increase their own autonomy, to be more effective. Management ensures compliance with policy and completion. Yeah. And that compliance stuff, like we don't want to live there. That doesn't feel like the most important thing, but sometimes it's necessary, right? We have to take care of those basics so that we don't get, don't get ourselves off track. Eric says management tasks that focus on the organizational operations of the school, instructional leadership using data to drive sustainable instructional change that drives continual learning and achievement. Yeah. And it's both, right? It's both and, right? We can't just pick one and say, well, I'm only this, I'm not the other. We have to do both. And, you know, certainly we're judged. Our competence is judged on the basis of how we handle both of those. Absolutely.
Tracy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tracy says, I want to lead, but I feel like all I do is manage. I want to be more intentional about my time. I would just encourage everyone not to. For sure, it's good to be intentional about your time, Tracy, but don't beat yourself up for doing the leadership and the management, because you're right, it is, and it's both.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that you'll see in the chapter on scheduling is, you know, I definitely don't advise prioritizing instructional leadership exclusively at the expense of the management, right? Like there are days when you are going to be slammed with management, and that's the work, right? That is absolutely the work, especially in these first couple of weeks of school. That is absolutely the work. You know, I think a lot of the approach and the philosophy that we're going to be talking about comes from a respect for teaching and a view of teaching that was shaped by just the excellent teachers that I worked with, and the openness and the expertise that teachers were willing to share, were willing to communicate. So one of the things that I wanted to just call out a little bit, we don't use this word in the book, but I think a lot of models for giving feedback on teaching are really deficit models, and I want to contrast the approach that we're here to discuss with the kind of deficit thinking that I hear all too often. Things like, you know, I need to get into classrooms and give feedback to teachers because they're making mistakes that I need to fix, or I really need to keep an eye on them because they're not going to do a good job if I don't, or they're not going to improve unless I tell them how. You know, and there is a partial truth to all of these, right? There is a value, you know, all of these are ways that we can make a difference. But I think overall, our main impact is going to be through those relationships and through that decisional information and through that professional development that we're able to provide. Not because, you know, we have to, you know, run around validating people or run around giving suggestions or run around telling people what to do better, and, you know, just inspecting our way to excellence. I don't think that deficit approach is what's going to get us there. And specifically, I don't think simply greater efforts in the form of traditional supervision and evaluation, like just doing the normal process much, much harder and faster and more intensively than anyone else. I don't think that is the way that we get to improvement. And I hope that comes through in this chapter. That's my soapbox here for you in chapter one. And at the end of chapter one, there's a little bit of a challenge to reflect on how much you've been getting into classrooms typically. And there are a lot of different ways that that's worded to kind of calibrate and figure out, okay, how often am I really getting into classrooms? How often am I seeing each teacher? What's the interval between visits to a teacher? So as we start a new school year, and as we start a new book study here to help ourselves get into classrooms more, I want to focus your attention on this issue of frequency. And we'll come back to this. Heather's going to talk more about it in chapter two. But I think frequency is so critical because it's what allows us to have enough of a dose. And I'll just ask this one way in the chat. What has been a typical number of classroom visits for you, would you say? And I will tell you, for me as a principal, before I got really serious about this, I would say I was typically probably getting into classrooms once or twice a week. I would say two was probably a good, you know, I'd feel like I was doing pretty well if I got into classrooms twice a week. Heather, what would you say about that? Like historically, I know the last couple of years you've been quite an outlier, but what would you say on that?
Sure. Yeah, you know, historically, way, way back, I would have this rush at the beginning, you know, and by about, oh, the end of September, sort of a month into school for us here in Canada, things would just come up. I would forget. There'd be all those crises that happen, and it would just sort of peter off from there. So yeah, there'd be quite a few per week, probably three, maybe even one a day at the beginning, and then just nothing, you know? So I love this approach to keep us accountable for three a day. Really is totally possible.
Deal. Susan says we're required to complete a minimum of five a week. Good deal. All right. Well, Heather, I will go ahead and turn it over to you. If you're just joining us, welcome. We are going to move pretty quickly to get through five chapters and still get everyone off to their own beginnings of the week. So Heather, we'll take it away with chapter two.
Great. Thank you. So in chapter one, we've established the why. We talked about why we want to get into classrooms and the importance of that. And then now in chapter two, we're going to introduce you to the model, the seven elements of the high performance instructional leadership model. So we'll go over all seven quickly here, and then we'll take each one by itself. So the high performance instructional leadership model involves classroom visits that are, first of all, frequent. We're looking at about 18 biweekly visits per teacher per year. We're going to talk that out a little bit more. Number two, we want them to be brief. Around 5 to 15 minutes. We find if we're spending longer in classrooms, you're gonna get interrupted. The chances of other stuff happening, it isn't going to work. So brief. Number three, substantive. More than just making an appearance. We're gonna walk through with you some of the ways that you can get started, but we don't want this to just be someone saying, oh yeah, that principal's present in classrooms. We want it to be, there want to be substance to it. And then number four, open-ended, focused on the teacher's instructional decision-making, not just to, you know, check off data collection. Lots of districts will ask you to collect data, and that's not what this is about. Number five, evidence-based, centered on what's really, really going on in the classroom. Criterion reference, linked to a shared set of expectations. And Justin and I have just been working on a book around this. So if you ever want to geek out on criterion referenced and instructional frameworks and shared expectations, we can both talk quite a bit about that. Number seven, we want it followed up with conversations and oriented to lead rich conversations between teachers and instructional leaders. So those are the seven elements. If we want to take them, break them down a little bit, first, that frequency. We want to take a look at three times a year as being the sweet spot. Three times a day for a total of 500 plus per year. When Justin first challenged me around this idea, I thought it was absolutely crazy. I just thought there was no way that I could get into classrooms 500 times, let alone give feedback or have some kind of conversation or email follow-up with most of those. But it is really possible when you break it down and say, I'm going to do three a day. And that will turn out most people are supervising around 25 to 30 people. And so you're going to end up being in each teacher's classroom between 18 and 20 times, generally about once every 2 weeks. That idea of occasional classroom visits are not enough to make a significant difference. When you're prescribed medication, you need to have the proper dose. And we're finding that, Kim Marshall said that 99.9% of the instruction takes place when you're not in the classroom. And so we need to change that. We need to be in there enough to get a good sample of what's going on in the classrooms in your school. And this is just a graphic to show you that idea that if you're just in periodically, just dropping in, it's not planned, it's not organized, you're only getting those little tiny pieces. You're not getting a big enough dose of what's going on in your building. If you're in there consistently, then you're able to see, you can see graphically here that you're getting that good bird's eye view of what's going on, a good sampling of the instruction that's going on in your building. So the frequency piece, we want to look at three per day. Secondly, we really want to keep it brief. If it's not brief, if it's not between 5, 10, 15 minutes per classroom, it's not going to be sustainable. you're just, the chances, the odds of something interrupting you are going to be too great. So it's just not sustainable to do them longer. We're not turning this into a teacher evaluation where you're staying for an entire lesson and going back, you know, and watching full lessons. These need to be brief snippets so that you can see, again, you're in there lots. You can get a good sense of what's going on. Thirdly, we want it to be substantive. We want it to be not the fluff walkthroughs, like Justin has the sticker up there on the PowerPoint. We don't want just the, you know, oh, good job, yes, you know, comments about bulletin boards and just those fluffy external things. We want these to lead to conversations around significant issues of teaching and learning. And we'll talk a little bit later about building trust first, but we really want that substantive piece. Fourth, we want it to be open-ended. The goal is that you as the school leader and the teacher will be learning together as a result of the walkthroughs. And so we really want this to be open-ended, and we'll give you some ideas for how to help that conversation be open-ended. But the thing we really want to avoid is those forms. And Justin and I were laughing about this earlier, you know, that idea of forms. I've been all around with different kinds of forms, you know, I'm dating myself, but we had carbonless forms, and they were all stacked up neatly, and there was pink and blue and white, and you could check things off. And this slide made me laugh out loud when I was looking at it, you know, just, we've all been there with carbonless forms. Many districts will require you to do perhaps a Google form. And when iPads were first a thing in schools, you know, we were all figuring out how to make a form and get it emailed to the staff. And so this idea that the forms are blinders, they just cause us to get so focused on what is just on that form that we're not able to have those real substantive conversations and really see what's going on in the classroom. So we really want to discourage the clipboard idea going around and filling out forms. Number five, we want it to be evidence-based. So that whole idea of getting enough info and enough evidence that will give you that concrete basis for a conversation. You're going to be in there, you're going to take low inference notes, and that's really your evidence, just those not making judgments, just this is what was going on, what kids were doing, what staff were doing, but you want evidence. Now, one of the things that I have been doing for a while that I find really helpful is Justin has these 10 CART questions, the evidence-based questions. And we will talk a bit more about this later too, but that idea of making low inference statements in your feedback, either in a conversation or perhaps in an email, and then letting some of these open-ended questions be the evidence or the basis of the conversation. And you can see there that there are 10 and they're all outlined in different pieces. But, you know, for example, just the first one, I noticed that you describe what the teacher did or what you noticed? Could you talk to me about how that fits in within this lesson? And most of the time, if you're asking just an open-ended question like that, most teachers are ready to tell you all kinds of awesome things that they're doing. So the next one, number six, is criterion referenced. And that's that idea of descriptive evidence isn't super useful unless you're aligning it with a set of shared expectations. And so I can go in and I can make all kinds of notes about what the teacher's doing, but then it's kind of a so what kind of thing. And we're looking for the criterion reference, the shared set of expectations. We will talk about that more later on as well. We're looking for that instructional framework. So a set of expectations shared between teachers and instructional leaders that collectively define professional practice and performance. And you could find this pretty much in all different kinds of contexts. You could use language from your teacher evaluation framework. In our district, we use Danielson, and I know a lot of you would use that framework. You might have a different one. You may use curriculum documents. You may have a particular initiative that your district's working on and that those goals and things would be outlined. So, but we're looking at making sure that we have those shared expectations and it's shared common language so that there aren't arguments about what's supposed to be happening and what's going on. The last one is conversation oriented. We really, really want to get away from that idea of just going in and making suggestions. We all know teachers that, you know, if you make those suggestions, they may just, we call it the fake feedback game. They may just like nod and smile and, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then, you know, they don't do anything about it. There are, on the contrary, there are other teachers who are so conscientious that if you make the suggestion, they're going to go home and stay up until the wee hours of the morning doing absolutely everything that you said that they should do. And so we want to avoid that kind of feedback and really start to get in to have real professional conversations. And I always think back to that word conversation, and that prefix con is Latin for with. We want to make sure that we're in a conversation with the other person. We're confronting a piece of knowledge, a piece of an interaction, and we're with someone, we're alongside them, and we're not doing something to them or leaving them a checklist or a form, but rather we're having that conversation. So when the seven key elements are in place, this is what's going to happen. You're visible. You know what's going on in each classroom. You know each teacher's strengths and weaknesses. You can make better improvement decisions, and you consistently strengthen your relationship with each teacher. So those are the kinds of things that are going on when you are in classrooms regularly. So some of the discussion that I'd invite you to throw into the chat is that idea that, what do teachers typically dislike about classroom visits or walkthroughs? You can think about those kinds of things. Why does that checklist or rating form approach not fit with this model that I've just outlined? And what sources of shared expectations do you use with teachers? I think there are some more discussion questions there too. What message do we send by focusing on what the teacher actually did and basing our feedback on the teacher's aims for the lesson? And what might we do if we don't see something we think we should have seen? And so those are some things, and I'll keep going, and I'll invite you to answer those in the chat. So as you get started, you know, think back to some of the times that you've had people or school leaders that you were reporting to, and they made some big announcement about they were gonna get into classrooms, or they were gonna do this. All you're going to do is terrify people and probably upset a lot of people. So you're not going to make a great big announcement. You're just going to set the tone that you visit classrooms. No, the first time around, especially no clipboard, absolutely no forms. Be present and pleasant. Visit everybody and keep track. This should be super enjoyable for visiting classrooms to become a consistent, sustainable habit. It has to be enjoyable for you. Otherwise, you're going to find all the reasons not to do it. It has to be enjoyable for the teachers. It needs to be professionally valuable. Think back to chapter one when we talked about why we want to do this. We want it to be professionally valuable and for you to have conversations that lead to learning on both your part and the teacher's part. And it can't be too big a time commitment, because that's exactly what got us into all of the ways that we talked earlier about, you know, we started out strong. It was too big a time commitment and we couldn't maintain it. So it really needs to be enjoyable and not a huge time commitment. And so cycle one, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in chapters 4 and 5, but cycle one, no notes, present and pleasant. Cycle two, again, no notes, just verbal noticing feedback. I noticed this, I noticed that. These two cycles can be super quick. They don't take much time at all. And cycle three then is when you're going to start, and beyond, is when you're going to start to take some low inference notes so that you have that evidence. And we talked about the questions before, and what I do is, I create a card that looks like this. I don't have one right here with me, but I use a large size index card. I think Justin has these cards that he'll send to you. But this idea of staying on track, having a card for each staff person, and on the front, having this, where you're able to keep track of when they have their prep, when they're where they are, when they're having their lunch, and that idea of being able to keep track of the dates that you saw someone in elementary, for instance, someone teaching math. I don't want to go back at the same time every day because I'm still going to see math. So I can keep track of who I've seen and I can stay on track, keep them in the same order. I've seen some people recently putting them sort of on a key ring, that kind of thing, so that they're always with you and they're always all together. But this is a great way. And I photocopy the questions and put them on the back of the cards. And so the Justin's 10 questions. And so that's a really easy way. If I want to have that quick conversation with the person more in the moment, I have those questions to remind me of where I might go with it. So as Justin said, he put the link there. If you need some, the Principal Center will mail them to you. The other piece that we would want to suggest would be the Repertoire app. And if you're a member at the Principal Center, you have access to this, but the Repertoire app will actually give you all the content that you need in terms of that can all of your instructional framework, the language, the shared language can be inputted into that app. And then you can just on your iPad, when you're visiting classrooms, you can have all kinds of content available to you. Justin, I don't know, do you want to talk a little bit more about Repertoire?
Sure, yeah. So this is a great time of year to get set up with Repertoire. You can send us your staff roster and we'll import everyone. And then if you're using your actual note cards to keep track of which teacher to visit, just start to type that teacher's name and it'll pop up. And then you'll have the, you know, the teacher's record pulled up to be able to add a new entry, email it to the teacher just as a regular email. There's no form or anything. So it's a great combo to use the physical note cards to remind yourself to get into classrooms and help you have the teacher's schedule in front of you and the questions, and then actually take your notes when you get to the point of taking notes in the app. So do reach out. We just put a lot of effort into updating that app this summer, added a lot of new features. So have to put a plug in for the app there. Reach out anytime. And yeah, we will send you the note cards. There's a link in the chat if you need. We'll physically mail them to you. We get them printed up 5,000 at a time. I got 5,000 last week and another 5,000 this week. So we are ready to go to mail these to you at no cost. So do feel free to request those. We'll get them in the mail.
Just noticed in the chat there, Eric saying, I always strive to understand the why behind the instructional decisions that teachers have around the lesson they were teaching. It guides our conversation, and I like to use questions for reflection to help guide our conversation. I love that idea of the guiding. You used that word a few times in that statement, you know, guiding the conversation, not going in with that set of this is what we're going to talk about or this is what I need to see. But rather letting what you see guide the conversation. So the action challenge for chapter 2, what formal document contains our teacher evaluation criteria in our school? Where can I find descriptions of curriculum-specific instructional practices that teachers have been trained to use? And what professional development experiences and materials have shaped my school's collective definition of effective practice? Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, and I was going to say, if you have anything you want us to import, like your framework, any, you know, documents that you've used in professional development, we can actually import the language for you, and we can advise you on which chunks of that would be most useful as repertoire snippets, because often there's a lot, and being selective is helpful. So yeah, when in doubt, reach out, send it our way, and we'll help you out.
Absolutely. So that was a quick race through chapter 2. Justin, over to you for chapter 3.
Yeah, I know we're moving fast because we've got 21 chapters to get through in 4 hours. We'll see if this was a good idea or not. But chapter 3, I think we can skim through pretty quickly here. The purpose of chapter 3 is really to contrast and compare what we're talking about in this book with things that are out there in the broader profession. And obviously, this approach of classroom walkthroughs is not intended to replace the formal observation and evaluation process, but there are other kinds of walkthrough models that are out there that I thought were worth mentioning. So it's my assumption that you're going to continue to do your formal observations, pre and post conference documentation, all that. If you are using the Repertoire app, we recommend that you use it for both your informal classroom visits and your formal observations, so you have it all in one place. You know, I think the big benefit of supplementing your formal observations with those informal visits is that you get to avoid what Kim Marshall calls the dog and pony show, right? People know you're coming. They do an extra special lesson. They threaten the children in advance to be on their best behavior. And, you know it's not a totally normal and typical lesson. if it's prearranged. And I have no problem with prearranged observations. I think they're a great idea. I think they serve some value, but I think we also need that perspective of unannounced, just, you know, show up when you can, see what's going on. And we're not just talking about doing more of the formal process. We're really talking about supplementing them. Obviously you're going to do some sort of formal evaluation, whatever's required in your district. Just one note of caution. I recommend that you don't say that your informal visits are non-evaluative. This is a mistake I hear all the time. People say, well, this is, I want people to relax, so I'm going to tell them it's non-evaluative if I show up for a walkthrough. And that's not really true. You can't really say that anything is non-evaluative if you are the evaluator. I mean, right? The reality is everything is going to shape your judgment in some way. So we recommend just kind of avoiding that topic, focusing on the fact that you're there to learn. You're not changing the formal evaluation process, but you just want to avoid claiming that that these are non-evaluative visits. Eric's asking about what format for the language that you want to import. We will take anything you've got. We will turn it into an Excel file and upload it for you. If you've got a PDF, if you've got a nasty photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy, we'll take care of it. So just send us whatever you've got. We'll make it work. The next model, and I want to give a lot of credit to Kim Marshall for his book, Rethinking Teacher Supervision and Evaluation. Kim has just been an incredible mentor to me and a role model. Like, I was very excited to meet him at Learning Forward a couple years ago, because he's just been a giant in our profession for so many years. But his book, Rethinking Teacher Supervision and Evaluation, really was formative for me as a principal. And he's got a model for using mini observations in place of those full period pre-announced kind of dog and pony show observations. So I think that's a great model. I think it's challenging. And if you want to learn more about that and maybe move in that direction, definitely check out that book. And that can be kind of a good follow-on. Like, after getting into classrooms consistently throughout the year, you may want to look seriously at this model, because I think it is a good one. And certainly the book is worth checking out. A couple of other models that we're drawing some contrast to. I'm not a big fan of having administrators, quote unquote, collect data. I don't think we're very good for that. I think we're too busy. I think we're too expensive. I think you should get university students, if you need to collect data, have somebody else do that. Again, because of that observer effect, right? People are just going to basically show you what you want to see. The sampling is very difficult. I have had researchers do data collection in my school, and what they do looks nothing like what we do as administrators. So really, that's just something different entirely. You might have seen books like Paul Bamberg Santoyo's Leverage Leadership and other books geared around helping teachers improve quickly. I think that can be especially valuable for new teachers, people who are new to the profession or new to the grade level. The challenge with those really heavily feedback-focused walkthroughs is that there needs to be a big gap in expertise. Like, if you know a lot more about teaching than your teachers, this is a great model. Very quickly, though, you will find that teachers catch up, right? And they get better at what they're doing, and you run out of things to say, and that makes it very difficult to consistently have an impact with this model. So you may use this model with your new teachers. You may think, okay, I'm going to get into this classroom. I'm going to give this teacher some feedback. That's going to be the main point of it. I'm going to help them improve in some specific areas, but that is going to run out of steam for a lot of teachers very quickly. And we don't want to just help people by being more critical, right? Like, if you have a great teacher, you don't want to just force yourself to find something to say by being really nitpicky. And I think that's, if we take this model to the extreme, we end up being too nitpicky, especially with our best teachers, which can backfire in a pretty nasty way. Another model that you will, of course, have many resources at your disposal to explore further is instructional coaching. Now, to truly be an instructional coach, I believe that you cannot be the evaluator. I think coaching as a legitimate and standalone kind of practice requires a degree of safety and insulation from the evaluation process that normally we cannot offer as evaluators. Dr. Tanya Gorey, in some trainings that she's done through SIBME, our friends at SIBME have hosted a number of different webinars with Dr. Tanya Gorey. She's a kind of an assistant superintendent and school turnaround expert. She says in my school, this is back when she was a principal, she said, in my school, everyone gets evaluated and everyone gets coached, but it's by two different people. And both of those people might be administrators, but your coach is going to be someone different from your evaluator. And I like that a lot. A great resource on wearing that coaching hat as an administrator, which is different than being a full-time instructional coach, is The Coach Approach by Jessica Johnson, Shira Leibowitz, and Kathy Perrette. Great, great book. Another book that is not as well known anymore, but this one has been around for a good long time, is the 3-minute classroom walkthrough, or the Downey walkthrough model. And this one is more about getting a sense of the physical classroom, like what it's like, you know, touch the four walls of the classroom. You might've heard that that statement, to just kind of soak in what's, you know, what it feels like to be in the classroom. This one is less about instruction and less about feedback and more about just showing up and kind of checking on things, very frequent, very brief. And I would say probably less substantive and not as conversation oriented as we're talking about in our model. Learning walks and instructional rounds are great for district level learning, and I would refer you to the book Instructional Rounds in Education if you're interested in that. And then one more model that you won't find in a book is Breakthrough Coach. Has anyone been? I've been to Breakthrough Coach training. Anybody else been to Breakthrough Coach training with Malachi Pancoast? He talks about spending 2 full days a week in classrooms, which I always found a little unrealistic and difficult on, you know, hard on the rest of the staff. To be unavailable for 2 whole days a week. But I think there are some good things there. I think he has some good advice on operations, you know, delegating and empowering your office staff. Almost everybody I've talked to who's been to that training has found it helpful, but there's not as much of a feedback model there. So that is it for chapter 3. I'd love to know which models, those or others, have been taught to you, are expected in your district. I know someone said just a little bit ago that 5 observations per week, you know, 5 walkthroughs per week were expected. What models do you recognize in your district? And how do those maybe overlap? How do they influence or interfere with each other? Sometimes we're asked to do kind of conflicting things by different people within the same organization, because, you know, lots of people have lots of goals for us, and most district administrators' goals need principals to do something. So sometimes we get pulled in conflicting directions. Sometimes they have an impact on teachers that, you know, the teachers might have some strong feelings about. The example I probably will give for the rest of my career is I was working in a major school district shortly after the school year began, and they had evaluated their teachers with a walkthrough form on the very first day of school. And when I mean evaluated, they gave them a score. And man, you want to see some upset teachers score your teachers on the first day of school. I mean, there were tears, there were resignations. It was ugly. So I'm not a big fan of the forms and the scoring and all of that when it comes to walkthroughs. I think this should be fun. As Heather said in our last chapter, this should be present. You know, this should be pleasant for everyone. This should be beneficial to everyone. So let's make it happen. Let's make it fun. And let me know in the chat what models you have used or been taught or been expected to do. And Heather, you can take it away with chapter 4 on our first 2 cycles visits.
All righty. Thank you. So those first 2 cycles, I alluded to them earlier. Excuse me. So how to visit classrooms 500 times a year. Like I said, when Justin first introduced this idea to me, you know, I was thinking it was pretty crazy to do 500 classroom visits per year, but it is possible. You need a good model. You need realistic planning, and you need lots and lots of determination. It is hard work. It's a challenge. And so we want it to be that challenge. The sweet spot we found is about 3 classrooms a day. If it's greater than 3, it's not sustainable. And that's when you get into that sort of tapering off after a couple of weeks of school. 3 a day is the sweet spot, and less than 3, it's that dosage idea. Back to that graphic, you're not getting that kind of coverage of your building and that understanding of what's going on. So one of the things that you really want to do is minimize your interruptions. If you ask people about barriers to getting those 3 walkthroughs in every day, most people will say time. But I find that regular classroom visits, if I'm in the classroom and I'm out and about, moving from classroom to classroom and in classrooms regularly, I actually have fewer interruptions, fewer behavior situations. I'm in the hall, I'm in those classrooms, and I find that things can get nipped in the bud early and there are fewer interruptions. Also, make sure you're visiting classrooms on the way to and from other meetings and duties. If you always know that you have duty, say, between 2nd and 3rd period, visit classrooms just before or just after that duty. You're already out and about, and you're not going to be taking up from a big chunk of time in your office. Schedule short time slots throughout the day and over schedule. based on your success rate. So the coming up in the next slide, so I'll walk through schedule. You can see there on the left, a typical what you could use for your elementary walkthroughs. And you can see there that, you know, second recess duty is at 10:30. So you're going to do some classroom walkthroughs as soon as that duty's over. You're already out, you're already in the building. Secondary one on the right, you know, you're going to look at supervising in the hall. And then you're going to see that, you know, you might want at 9:50 to do three visits for that whole period. But those ideas of using what your existing schedule, you're starting the school year off, you probably already have your schedule. So start to think about when you could make those visits and when you could maximize times that you're already out and about. We do recommend that you overschedule. You want to aim for three visits a day. And so put it in four different time slots in your school day that you're going to do those visits. And or if you're finding that you have a lower success rate, put it in five times. You'll get to three visits and you'll find that very quickly you're not going to have to overschedule as much, but just make sure that you're scheduling it several times throughout the day and those inevitable interruptions will come up and it's okay. You've still got some other time scheduled. So just respond in the chat there. What are the best times of day for you to be in classrooms? Tell us when you think, you know, Justin's got a question there. How many slots will you need to hit three a day? And what are the best times a day for you to be in the classroom? The next piece is the order in which we visit teachers. And so we recommend that you visit teachers in a particular order. There's no magic to the order, but keep the same order each time or group them by department or grade level team. If you choose at random, you're going to avoid, and that's just a fact of life. You can think about when you have tried walkthroughs before, when you've tried to get into classrooms, there's places that you wanted to go. There's people that you are, you know, that you like their work, they're very welcoming. And so up to this point, and you can respond in the chat to this, what characterizes the teachers you've visited most? What characterizes the teachers you tend or would prefer to visit the least? You have those, everybody has those favorites where it's easy, it's fun. It might even just be something practical, like it's close to your office. So you're going to start there each time, but that is not a good way to do it. We want to do it in the same order each time. So everybody gets those 18 to 20 visits per year. So again, we reviewed this a bit in the earlier chapter, but your first three cycles, no big announcement, no notes, just show up. A brief visit, followed by a brief chat. For the second one, a brief explanation, sorry, and a brief visit. And then the third cycle, you're going to start taking notes and implementing the full model. So we do want to talk a little bit about why you want to track your rotation, why you want to go in a particular order. Again, you want to avoid avoiding avoidance. You want to also avoid the perception of targeting. You've all had teachers probably say to you, it's not fair, you're picking on me. And so if you're going to everybody the same number of times, you're not targeting any one person. Keep an even distance between the visits to each class. So you're not sort of seeing someone, you know, on consecutive days or just with a day in between. And you can see different periods in different subjects. If you don't have that plan for rotating, like I said, you'll inevitably skip some and you'll visit other people more often because you'll just find that you're naturally attracted to some classrooms. I mentioned earlier that we had seen recently people putting their cards, their keeping track cards on those key rings. And you can see that there's different models there, different ways that people have used them. And, you know, lots and lots of great ideas there in terms of keeping track. I just keep the cards. I'm going to keep them on a key ring this year, like those examples, but I just keep them on my desk and I just know exactly who's going to visit next. So who do you visit? If you share supervision of teachers, if you have APs and you're not the only person supervising or evaluating, I would just visit the people that I'm evaluating. Perhaps teachers on your coaching caseload, if you're an instructional coach. If it's just you, you might be visiting everyone. You also might want to visit those non-observable staff you want to check in with. So the people that you're not required to evaluate, I've spent quite a bit of time getting an instructional framework together for my educational assistants. And that's been great. So the EAs, I want to check in with them. And so they might be someone that you visit regularly as well. And Joni says, my secretary hands me mine each day, which keeps me from over or under visiting based on my comfort zone. Great advice. If you can enlist the support of your admin assistant, your secretary, you absolutely should, and get that person to just keep you on target. And they'll also be a great ally in deflecting all the stuff that can interfere and become a barrier for you. We're going to talk in the next week about some of those habits and some of those barriers that do come up. So grouping teachers, you might want to group teachers according to grade level, for instance, or subject area, because then in one sort of set of three walkthroughs, you could see different parts of the same lesson. You could see the same lesson taught by different teachers. If they happen to have a common prep, they're all available at once for those conversations. They wouldn't be a group conversation, but they'd all be available for you to chat. And it's just very practical, less walk-ins. You might want to group by department, by grade level, by location. So just respond there in the chat. Which groupings make the most sense for you in your school building? Would it be team? Would it be department? Would it be grade? Would it be a certain geographical area, you know, a certain floor in the building or a certain wing? What would work for you? As we move along, we want to talk a little bit about using big blocks for office work. If you happen to have this gift of a long, uninterrupted block of time in your office, use it for office work. It doesn't happen very often. So we want to make sure that we're not recommending that you split up some big chunk of time that you would normally have for that big work. Don't interrupt yourself when you're working. Use those natural breaks, like we talked a little bit earlier, in terms of either recesses or breaks between periods. Go slow to go fast. The first two cycles can be completed very, very quickly. Do not skip them, because they're starting to set the tone and build that trust with your staff, but they can go quite quickly. And starting gradually and doing just the drop-ins, just being pleasant and present, is a key to building trust and preparing people for the heavier feedback conversation that you're going to have as you move on. How to scare everybody? Like I said earlier, make a great big announcement and visit the same teachers over and over and make them really paranoid. Visit one teacher, but not the others. They're going to talk about it and they're going to know that you've been one place and not the other. So, and then take lots, and this is another way to scare people. Take lots and lots of notes with a very anxious or serious look on your face, and you're sure to scare everybody. So we want to make sure that you're going slow to go fast. So just in the chat, there's some more questions. What reactions have you had so far from staff? If you've started to implement this model, who have you found the most pleasant to visit, and what reactions may have surprised you along the way? So
can I jump in here, Heather? I just wanted to share a thought about randomness versus keeping track. And certainly your initial order of visits, you know, it doesn't really matter. Do whatever makes sense to you. But I'll never forget, I had a friend who was remodeling his bathroom, and he said, you know, we've got this really nice tile. I said, oh, the tile looks beautiful. There are different styles of tile that all look beautifully together. And it's like, oh, I love how there are just these other tiles interspersed randomly. And then he stopped and he said, no. This was not random. It looks random, but in order to look random, it was actually a ton of work to get it to look this way. And I think you'll find that random actually does not turn out very random. Like it's the strangest thing. Like if you pick people at random, they will tend to come up like in a weird order. Like you'll visit somebody like 2 days in a row, and then it'll be 5 weeks before you see him again. So again, you can pick people at random the first time, but whatever you pick, stick with it or be purposeful. It doesn't matter all that much, but do stick with that rotation, because you'll find that for whatever reason, it does not feel very random to just pull people at random. And if you have, like Eric was talking about, having multiple different groups, like if you have a group that you supervise that you need to be consistent with, and you have another group that you don't supervise, but you do want to get into their class, you could do like a two-deck strategy. I like that. That could work really well.
Tracy says, I love the card system, so thank you for those. I do departments because they do chat, and they do chat, right? We want to make sure that we're consistent there. I love how the card system keeps me on target. Absolutely. So again, just to review, cycle one, everybody briefly 1 to 5 minutes just to break the ice, no notes, no feedback, just make an appearance to get yourself started. This will get you comfortable with it too. If it's a brand new practice, you might be feeling a little awkward with it. So get past the teachers and students' initial reaction and try to do this all in one day. This is usually pretty possible. You're really just dropping in, record the date on the note cards, and then you're ready for cycle two. And that's when you're going to start visiting 3 teachers a day, every day for between 5 and 15 minutes. Again, no notes or feedback this time, just briefly acknowledge something positive, chat for a minute if you can, and be pleasant and present. And again, you're going to document those. And then in cycle three and beyond, and Justin's going to talk a little bit more about that in chapter five, but the same rotation as cycle two, or sorry, in cycle three, you're going to want the same rotation as cycle two and start to take some notes, share them with the teacher, start using the questions, those 10 questions, start to, there's your 10 questions. And then you're going to have the chapter four action challenge. Visit 3 or more classrooms, chat briefly with no heavy feedback. How were you received? What message did it send to teachers and students? Did you encounter any resistance? How might you address it if you do encounter some resistance? And what might you say in an announcement to staff after you've made it to everyone? So those are just some discussion questions and an action challenge for you. I know we're whipping through this really quickly, but that's chapter four.
Thank you, Heather. Fabulous. So yeah, really critical point here at the end. The announcement is after you've been around to everybody at least once, right? You don't want to make this announcement in advance. You don't want to say, hey, everybody, this year is going to be different. I'm a new person. I'm going to get into classrooms way more than I ever had. Like you want to, you know, you want to actually change what you're doing, but you don't want to promise that because that is, I don't know, that just always seems to go poorly. So you want to actually give yourself a little bit of a track record and then bring it up, then kind of explain what you're doing. And I think we've got some sample language for how you might do that. And chapter five was a little bit hard to place in the book because it is not yet time for this. You're not ready for your third cycle yet. I don't think anybody has, very few people have been in school long enough to really be at their third cycle at this point. And that's where you really start taking notes and having a more substantive feedback conversation and hitting all 7 of those characteristics from chapter 2. But this chapter is here to give you a little bit of a vision for what you're working up toward. And, you know, often we let the cart get before the horse. We say, okay, I'm seeing some trends. I'm going to give feedback on this one particular thing. We're going to do a training on it. I would just say, you know, as you start to get into classrooms more and start to spot trends, just hold them loosely, you know, just say, okay, I'm going to keep an eye on that. I'm going to collect more information. Don't try to identify a trend as soon as you have 2 data points, right? Like you can draw a line as soon as you have 1 data point and, you know, the line has an implied trajectory as soon as you have 2 data points. Just give it time, give yourself more time to gather more information. This is a time when starting your third cycle, you are going to start to be more expressive and transparent about what your purpose is, what your rationale is. You are going to start to take notes and you are going to start to use that language of your instructional framework in your notes and in your conversations, but you don't want to do that yet. You do not want to do that until your third cycle. So, again, the first cycle, as Heather said, can happen in 1 day. You can knock this out tomorrow if students are back tomorrow. You can knock this out on your first student day, whenever that is. Maybe you have students coming back on Thursday. Great, do it Thursday. Don't let it take more than a day or two to get around to every teacher you supervise. Just make an appearance, break the ice. Cycle two, you're slowing down to 3 a day, staying a little longer, paying more attention, noticing some things, but not taking any notes. Then after that first cycle, in between that first and second cycle, is when you want to make that little announcement. Again, don't make a huge deal of this. Keep it light. Say something like, hey, it's been really great to see all the great things that are going on. I'm going to, you know, do my best to get into classrooms more this year. Once you've been around to everyone, because again, they will talk, and you don't want to make this announcement before you've been to everyone, because somebody's going to feel left out and wonder why you didn't get to them and, you know, what's going on there. So I just want to keep this low key, send out an email or put it in your regular newsletter. You know, I recommend that you use a regular channel if possible. You know, if you normally send a Sunday email to your staff or a Monday morning email, use that. If you have a staff meeting every week, you can use that, but just kind of keep keep this simple, emphasize your own learning, your own responsibility to get into classrooms, and just keep it low key. So some key messaging, feel free to take a screenshot of this one if you want. You might want to say things like, hey, it's been really great to get into classrooms, really been enjoying seeing what you're up to. I'm going to keep that up. I'm going to keep on getting into classrooms. I'm going to try to be of more service to you when I do get into classrooms. It would be helpful to me if I could have more perspective on, you know, your intentions for the lesson and kind of where you are in the unit, if we have a chance to talk. So I don't want to take up a ton of your time in the middle of a busy day, but it is really helpful to me to just to have context and have, you know, give you a chance to, you know, to share your thoughts. So I do appreciate those opportunities to speak with you. If I'm taking notes, I will give you my notes. I don't want you to, panic one way or the other about anything I might be writing down. So I will send you what I write down. You don't have to reply. Feel free if you want to share more, but there's not an expectation that you email me an explanation of what I saw. And what we're trying to do with that kind of announcement or that kind of reassurance is deal with people's fears, right? Because people's fears are huge in this process, especially if they feel like you're compiling a J. Edgar Hoover file on them and you're going to come after them at any given moment, right? This has happened to teachers in every single school, that someone has compiled a file on them and then thrown the book at them, right? And we need to deal with that fear right off the bat. We want to not have any secrecy about what we're writing down. And that's why repertoire is designed to make it easy to email your notes to the teacher, right? Not to email a form, not a rating, not a score. Not a big fan of that. And by the way, if your district is making you do that, I will be happy to send a copy of my book to your boss and we can start changing things at the district level. And maybe you can get promoted and then make things better so that you're not having to rate your teachers on the first day of school. But we want to keep this as low inference as possible. We want your notes to be descriptive and we want them to be shared with the teacher so that there's no secret dossier that makes people worry, that makes people anxious, makes people afraid. And again, repertoire just makes it really easy to just send your notes as an email. Let us know if you need help getting set up with that. And we want to get that specific language of your instructional framework in there. So do let us know what you use. If you use T-Test or Danielson or whatever, let us know. We'll get that imported for you, not for the purposes of scoring, but for the purposes of using precise language. And again, we don't want to name specific levels of performance, but it works really well to pull language from a specific level of performance to describe practice that you think is at that level. And by using that language in the description of what you're seeing, using it in your notes, you'll be able to get a sense of whether it really rings true and whether you're using the right level. You know, if a teacher is at a level 4 and you're using the level 3 language, it's going to feel like it doesn't quite fit. And you're going to realize that you need to kind of make an adjustment about where you see that teacher being. We talk a little bit in this chapter about asking broken questions. Big idea there is if you're doing all the talking, this is not going right, right? The teacher should be the one who's doing most of the talking in these conversations so that they are doing most of the reflecting and the growth. Asking a broken question is all about sharing a piece of evidence and just saying, you know, tell me about that. Or what do you think, you know, and just kind of trail off, let the teacher talk. And that is going to give you insight into the teacher's thinking, that idea of the whole iceberg of practice, that we can only see a little bit of what's going on to get a sense of the teacher's practice, that hidden 90% of the iceberg that's beneath the surface of the water. We've got to get the teacher talking and we've got to be listening much, much more than we're talking. And that's going to give us that decisional information that we want to keep things on track. And if you find yourself getting off track frequently, maybe every time you're out of the building, go back to those basics. You know, I want to get back into the classroom. I want to listen. I want to learn. I want to pay attention. It's not, I'm giving myself this impossible, I have to give feedback task every day. It's, I need to spend my time where I belong, which is in the classroom. So that is it for chapter 5. Just keep up those visits. Again, get to everyone quickly and then get started on your second cycle with 3 a day and repeat until the end of the year, and you will be on track for 500 visits a year. All right, I will stay on with with you as long as you would like for discussion and Q&A. I do want to respect our time. And Heather, we kind of made it. I was shocked. We had like 100 slides. This is slide 102. I'm
pretty impressed. Yep.
This is 11 not,
yeah.
This is maybe not good professional learning design to have 100 slides for an hour, but I appreciate your bearing with us and would love to have your thoughts and discussion here. So feel free to unmute if you want. In the meantime, just a little bit of housekeeping. If you just joined us, if you just became a member, your book should be on the way. When in doubt, please feel free to check. We can send you tracking information, make sure that we got you a book. If you joined a long time ago and never got a book, let us know and we will send you one right away. I just got another case of 50 yesterday, and we'll be sending those out to everybody who needs them. Audiobook is in your member dashboard. Log in, you'll see a link to it. You can listen to chapters 6 through 10 for next time. You can go back and listen to chapters 1 through 5. They're all short. They don't take a ton of time to get through. But next week, we're talking about productivity. So I'd love to know what challenges you're facing, what's making it difficult. I know a lot of people are covering classes and dealing with teacher absences. And that's just kind of how this year is going to go for a portion of time. And definitely want to encourage you to not feel guilty. Please don't take anything that we just said about the importance of getting into classrooms as a reason to feel guilty if that's just impossible for a while. This is a crazy year when it comes to getting staffing. I'm just seeing unprecedented challenges around staffing. So please give yourself permission to do what needs to be done on any given day. And once things get a little bit more stable in terms of staffing, then this all gets more possible. But I know if you're covering class, like you literally cannot be in two places at once. So please don't beat yourself up over that. And please do what you need to do. All right, let's do some Q&A, some discussion. I know we kind of zipped through our discussion questions. Jennifer says, I bought 20 copies for my leadership team at all my schools. They're going through the book now. Jennifer, I love it. Awesome, awesome. So that would be... that is kind of the ideal scenario there, is to have everybody on the same page. Because as you said, often within a district, there are, you're saying one thing, but other people are also, asking principals to do things, maybe to collect data or to monitor different initiatives. And sometimes it can be a little bit confusing for principals as far as like, what are the different purposes of getting into classrooms? So if you have a primary purpose, that can kind of anchor things, and people can pursue those secondary purposes, as needed. But chapter 2 really is all about the model, and chapter 3 is all about how it relates to other models. So that can be helpful in clarifying some of that. Susan, thank you so much for being here. Jim, thank you so much for being here. Does anybody want to unmute and raise an issue, ask a question? This is a great chance to talk through some of the tough stuff. And there is lots of tough stuff when it comes to getting into classrooms. I think this is one of the hardest things for us to do consistently as a profession, just as proven by how difficult it is, how rare it is to get into classrooms this much. So anybody have a topic they want to bring up, a question or a comment? Go right ahead. And kudos to you for being here, for making this a priority this year to get into classrooms. I truly believe this is not something that is just for the people in the easy schools to do. We all know someone who's in a kind of a cushy school, that doesn't have a whole lot of stuff going on. You're probably thinking, that's not my school. I am not the cushy school. But kudos to you for making it happen, for making it a priority. So anybody want to jump in there? Hey, Tracy, go ahead. Oh, it's not picking up for some reason. I'm sorry. Heather, can you hear Tracy?
I cannot.
Okay, yeah, something's going on with the audio there. But you want to try again? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a Bluetooth or what, but feel free to pop it in the chat there. I'm sorry, we can't hear you. Shanita, did you want to say something?
I was just going to ask, can we apply this model in case we have to go back to virtual and blended learning?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think if we do end up with virtual, man, I'm ready to be done with that, aren't you? But who knows? What I would say for virtual, sometimes people need help, and I think it's great to show up and be helpful if people need help with, figuring out your learning management system or whatever. I think for connecting with teachers when everybody is forced to be virtual, there is no substitute for phone calls. So if you went through the virtual instructional leadership challenge that we offered last year, one of the things that I suggested instead of, a virtual classroom visit is to just talk with the person when they're not teaching. Just call them up, say, hey, how are you doing? Anything you need? You know, just because I feel like that's a, you know, people need different things when we're virtual. If you do have that happen, I would be happy to send you the virtual challenge. We officially like retired it because we're like, we're ready to be done with virtual. So you won't find it very easily in your dashboard. We can send it to you if you need it. But yeah, I think we're all hoping for a nice normal in-person year, even if it's a little crazy in some ways.
It's a little tricky to just as I think about the virtual piece, and when we were virtual like a year and a bit ago, it's a little tricky and a little bit creepy almost to have to be dropping in. Our platform was Teams, Microsoft Teams. And so it just was a little bit like you were, I don't know, spying on people, that kind of thing. And I know people would understand, but I agree with Justin, just those interactions. If you're undergoing that need to be virtual, then people are under an awful lot of stress. And there's all kinds of stuff going on for everybody personally, as well as professionally. So we did some Zoom check-ins. We did some phone calls too. So yeah, just, I would really go to the relational side of things and just make sure everybody's doing okay and keeping their head above water.
Yeah. Hey, Eric. Thanks, Heather.
Hey, and then Heather, great point. You know, the other thing that I found was really helpful going into virtual classrooms was also just to see how many, the sea of icons that teachers had to face every day. Mm-hmm. And so we used Microsoft Teams, and I was in a teacher's classroom and it was just their picture and 26 initials. And it was just one of those things of everything that this teacher could do to engage their children, they did. But having that perspective of just being there even for, you know, the 10 minutes I had gone into class it really resonated with me with what a challenge and a year they had, because that's what they got to see, right? They didn't see the 25 faces and interact with them. They got icons. And just having that as a perspective as a leader was really helpful, because it helped shape some of the conversation that happened afterwards of, you know, we talked about, if we are back in the situation, I remember this conversation with the teacher very clearly was she would share her screen frequently so that the kids could see what she saw. And that started to turn the tide. So they got to see, she's like, I'm trying to see you all and I see 25 icons. And slowly but surely the kids started to turn on their cameras just because they felt for her as well. But that's always you know, an interesting perspective to have, what we as leaders may not see on the same side, because we go to meetings and their cameras are on. So we assume that's what they were experiencing. They may not have been.
Great use of that, you know, using that opportunity to really get into the, you know, the shoes of the teachers and helping them helping you understand what they're going through, for sure. Love it.
Thanks, Eric. All right. Tracy says, yeah, sorry about the audio issue there. Tracy says, this will be my third year attempting 3 per day. I've improved so much from all of this. Oh yeah, the scorecard and preparing the day. Yeah, and I need to do my post for today. I know Shanita is our number one most consistent person with checking in. Shanita, I gotta give you kudos for that. So we have a planner. We've got a daily planner that you can print off for every month. And I sent you an email earlier today with the download link to that planner. And look for that in last Wednesday's email as well. Any of those emails with the ILA in the subject line, that planner is a great way to just kind of mentally run through your day. I still use an electronic calendar, but I write out what my appointments for tomorrow are just so I think through them. And then the daily scorecard that Tracy's talking about is all about thinking, okay, what are my big priorities? I'm actually going to weight those with points. So if I have a 5-point task for tomorrow, I know that's going to occupy a lot of my thinking for the day. And then, you know, you can kind of keep track of miscellaneous other to-dos as well. But it can help manage that, you know, important but not urgent, or, you know, help you hit deadlines as well. So glad you're finding the planner helpful. Yeah, definitely encourage you to print that out if you've not done so. Jill says, students start tomorrow. Awesome. Jill, very excited for you. Let's see, coming into the role from an instructional coach position. This feels very similar. My goal is to complete cycle 1 by Wednesday. Fantastic. Great. That's awesome. Let us know how it goes. And yeah, when you finish cycle one, just roll right on into cycle two, right? Like you probably don't need to visit the same person twice in one day. So if you get it done, you know, you give yourself a pat on the back and not worry about it for the rest of the day. But yeah, day two or day three, you can absolutely get started on cycle two, stay a little bit longer, see three teachers, and then just keep at it. And that is the path to success. And I guess one thing I hope that everybody takes away from, you know, from trying this is that everything else gets easier when you get into classrooms. Now, sometimes you see stuff that you wish you hadn't seen, but at the same time, you needed to see it, right? You, you find problems that you might've rather ignored because they weren't in your face and you do have to deal with them. But at the same time, you get ahead of things like never before. And it's less reactive. People are not bringing you problems nearly as much because you're seeing them. You're just able to be that presence and you're getting that decisional information. I don't want to, you know, we don't talk a ton for the rest of the book about the decisional information. We do talk a lot more about feedback, especially in section three of the book, but that decisional information really is key because you wear so many decisional hats, right? Budgeting, staffing, teacher evaluation, professional development, all of those decisions that you make are going to be better decisions if they're informed by your presence in classrooms and your conversations with teachers. So kudos to you for making it happen. Please let me know how I can help. And please note your productivity challenges this coming week. I would love to hear what is making this tough. And we will tackle that directly next Sunday night. At the same time, we will upload the recording to your member dashboard. You can watch this anytime. Heather, thank you so much for being on this.
Thank you, Justin.
Crazy whirlwind tour of the book with us.
And, can't wait to see what folks are saying next week. I want to know how it goes.
All right. Take care, everyone, and have a wonderful week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.